the crowd on its feet. They are absolutely silent.
Wow, harder than I thought. Racing and talking at the same time.
Welcome to World of Motorcycling, covering rider culture and the motorcycle industry with John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and Steve, the producer, Johan.
Welcome, everyone, to another hour of World of Motorcycling. I'm Walt with my co-hosts, John and Steve. We've got a great show lined up for you. We always start this segment off with Inside the Helmet, where we do a ride-by overview of what's happening in the motorcycling industry.
Well, you know what we forgot to say last week there, Walt?
What?
May is Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month.
Safety Awareness Month, yep.
Now, my question to you is, does that mean the rest of the 11 months we don't have to be aware of motorcycle safety?
Well, I think we're back to being aware of a motorcycle safety now that we have a new administration and everything. When Mary Peters left, they shut everything down.
Yeah, it was like a second, an afterthought at that point, wasn't it?
Well, sort of, yeah. Mostly their big deal was let's make sure that the truckers' unions get all kinds of benefits. But now they're back to...
And Walt is talking about the National Highway Safety Administration, right?
Right. Well, there's right. that. I'm talking about the... Mary Peters was the Secretary of Transportation.
Okay, so this...
And she had an initiative. And basically, the big thing was it was mainly around, hey, watch out for motorcyclists. We know you can't see us, but if you take a little time and try. And, of course, the biggest thing nowadays is cell phones. You know, if people would just stay the hell off of their cell phone. If you crash your car into another car, then you may all get hurt really bad. But if you crash your car into a motorcycle, you probably kill him.
You know, in our safety section later on, I'm going to touch upon something, a new study that just came out about the good news is there's less people dying on the road for motorcycles, but the bad news is we will explain the bad news when we get there. But in the meantime... One quick thing is Colorado motorcycle safety courses will now be handled by the Colorado State Patrol. The new lead coordinator of the Motorcycle Operator Safety Training Program will be the Colorado State Patrol, and they will be in support and building awareness of the support training courses, including the state's licensing waiver programs. And speaking of licensing, I go down tomorrow with my 15-year-old son, and we get the waiver endorsed, not the endorsement, but the special learner's permit, because he signed up with our good friend Chris Johnson and his group to do...
That's your youngest, finally.
Yes, He's 15. Amazing. And then I wanted to get into a few things with the sales here. Q1, first quarter for Piaggio Group, released its first quarter results for 2018, which were highlighted by a strong start to the year in emerging countries, an upward trend to offset the general weakness in Europe sales and United States. Overall, the net sales grew by 3 million euros compared to Q1 in 2017. Now, what's interesting is Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, we really, really will cover this, but it's really what happened at the end of the year.
Right.
How well did you do the overall year? Because what we've seen is cold winters. In a lot of the United States has really reduced sales everywhere.
Right.
And that affects first quarter. And it can affect fourth quarter because going into the fall, our friends to the north and Midwest and all that, they all suffer from snow. Yep. And it'll go all the way through till May in a lot of places, like right now. So things are thawing out.
Well, you know, we had a very mild winter, but... I mean, Washington is known for rain, and people are not going to come down and test ride a bike. And one of the things that we learned was if you get a guy to take a test ride, you like triple your chances of selling him a bike.
Right.
And if you can't get anybody riding a bike, their first thought is, well, how am I even going to get this thing home? I don't want to ride it through that rain.
And you're right, because once you start riding, you get used to the rain. But when you're first starting out, you're like, the last thing. So we've known that traditionally it's now spring when the sun comes out, and all the way through summer is your best time of the year for bike sales. Because look, let's face it, it's an entertainment It's entertaining. It's a sport.
Yep.
And the last thing you want to do is riding the snow and the rain if you don't have to. The hardcore guys, which I'd say maybe 20% of riders are, they'll ride year-round. But the average rider, I don't care where you're at, when it starts getting miserable out, they're not riding.
Right. Well, normally, if I was working,
as a commuter.
I would commute. Rain, snow, whatever.
I have a friend that when he rode motorcycles, he would ride every day. He'd commute. Matter of fact, he put an ice chest on the back of his, I think he had like a 1200 Suzuki or something cruiser, kind of like what John's got.
Yeah.
And he had an ice chest that he wrapped around there, and it would stay, everything would stay safe in there, waterproof.
Yep.
And he rode every day. And even if there was a little snow, he would show up. So. But that was somebody who commutes.
Right,
most people,
right.
Walt, do not commute to work on their bikes unless it's nice.
Well, and then once again, now that I'm not working, I haven't been able to find a job, I find myself not going out unless
it's sunny.
But when it's sunny, it's like, okay, that big yellow thing's back up in the sky. I got to get the bike out before it starts doing something silly again. So,
now,
which supposedly it's going to do tomorrow. So,
well, and a lot of people would say, geez, Walt, you're not working. Why aren't you out riding every day? And it's like, well, there are reasons for that, too.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we get depressed when we don't have work. And maybe it's better, hey, I'm going to go out in the morning and just go out for the morning ride for 45 minutes. And maybe you come back and you're like, I
kind of do it the other way around. I spend the morning trying to get a job and spend the afternoon riding around. So,
yeah, because you need to get, you have to reward yourself for not, oh man, don't get me going on that. I know all that. Kymco hires new VP of sales. South Carolina-based Kymco USA has hired industry veteran Sean Getzey as its new vice president of sales for both the U.S. and Canadian market. Starting May 14th, he replaces Mike Hancock, who formerly handled U.S. sales for Kymco as national sales manager. Hancock is now district sales manager for Suzuki. Getzey will be recruiting top talent to double Kymco's sales force within a year and anticipates high interest with Kymco's unprecedented and uncapped commission structure, the company said. Hey, Walt, did you hear that? They're opening it up for sales, but I guess you'd have to be where they need it because we know the guy that's around this area, and he's probably not going to give it up. But anyway, it'll be interesting. They see a lot of growth opportunities there.
Well, there's our music. Stand by, and we'll be right back with more World of Motorcycling.
And a really cool guest.
Yep.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johan. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. where we'll be waiting for you.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377. Where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, a law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the second segment of World of Motorcycling. Walt, Steve, and John here. For more about the show, visit www.worldofmotorcycling.com. We like to start this segment off with candid conversations where we spend time interviewing the movers and shakers, pioneers and speed freaks, customizers, and rebels within the world of motorcycling. And this week's guest is award-winning Kurt Taylor, custom bike builder, TV personality, and owner of Custom Design Studio, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary.
Isn't that amazing? 30th anniversary. Yeah.
For more about him and his company, visit them at www.customdesignstudios.com. So how's it going, Kurt?
Well, you know, we're working hard at it and always getting involved in a lot of new stuff. The riding season is upon us and things are picking back up nicely.
Yep.
Well, I thought we would get in a little bit of that in the second segment that we've got with you, more of the recent stuff. But I wanted to step back, and for those who do not know about you, I wanted to just give you allow you to share a little briefly about your history. What drew you into the world of motorcycles in the first place?
I'd have to say my father and, you know, hanging out. He was a machinist, and he had a machine shop, and I got a mini bike at the age of 10, and it changed my life forever.
Oh, wow. Now, was that like a Briggs & Stratton 3.5 horsepower mini bike, or was this a tote goat or even larger?
It actually, the very first bike was a little Honda 50. You see them yes. In the pits nowadays. They're really popular still, yep. The pit bikes. It was a little Honda-matic, you know, and it was just the greatest fun.
You know, it's funny because my buddy had the real mini bike, the 3.5 horsepower, pull it with the lawnmower engine on the side type thing. And I'll tell you what, it was fun putzing around, but if you try to go up a hill, even as a kid, it didn't take you up the hill. It didn't. That Honda 50 had a little bit more oomph to it than that Briggs & Stratton 3.5 horsepower. Yep. But
well, actually, the Honda 50 is what drew Harley into having. They had a little bitty, wasn't a 50, but.
And they imported it from another company.
Yes, and they brought it in just because they wanted to have something to compete
right.
with the Honda 50. And once again, yeah. Harley has this image, and it didn't fit the image. And so
yep.
I had a friend who had one, and he'd go around telling everybody, yeah, screw you, I've got a Harley, so kiss my grits. But, you know. But it didn't go over really well with a lot of people, but, you know, so.
So you started as a kid playing around on mini bikes, and I'll bet you were like me. You got into working with your bicycle and taking bicycles apart and spray painting them and fixing them up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The bicycles, you know, it's like me and a bunch of my buddies were constantly tinkering on them and upgrading them. We actually started, I'm not saying that we started the trend or what have you, but we were putting number plates and motocross handlebars on our bicycles right before the BMX craze started in the 70s.
You know, that's interesting because I grew up with the Stingrays. And so prior to that, even I had a Sears 3-speed, which is just an upright, normal handlebar 3-speed, and then I kept that, but I ended up buying it was like an orange crate, but it was a knockoff, and mine had the drum brake, the extended fork, the sissy bar in the back with had a stick shift. I have a picture of that. I was the king of the neighborhood, and it was fluorescent orange.
The apple crates and the lemon peelers, man, those were the bomb. Those bikes were just the coolest. I had two of them, and then I got a hold of an even harder to find. It was a Schwinn with a 2-speed kickback hub, and that's how you shifted it. You didn't have a shifter per se, but you literally kicked the pedal crank backwards, and it shifted it into another gear. It was like a little soft kick back and then forward again.
Wow.
Yeah. Those bikes were just indestructible.
They were.
We put them through their paces.
Well, and banana seats and those big ape hanger. I mean, that was the craze. And like I said, I had a knockoff that was a different manufacturer, but it was as good as. And and mine was fluorescent orange. I mean, you could put a black light on it. It was pretty cool. So with that in mind, when did you get into starting to tinker and build your first custom bike?
Well, that didn't happen until a while later. About the time I was 15, my dad had a Z1 Cowie 900, and I got on that, and I never got back into the bicycle thing after that. The truly life-changing experience.
Yep.
That bike was so fast and so powerful, and then I went through a series of...
What year was that?
I was always tinkering, but I had a bunch of Honda CB754 with an 836 kit, and then I got my first Harley after that, and honestly, that Honda was one of the best bikes. All it ever needed was gas, a little bit of oil, and a tire once in a while. But
yes.
And then my first Harley was an old Ironhead Sportster, and it was a real lemon. But I loved that bike. You know, it was crazy. You'd ride the bike all day and come park it in the garage at night, and the next day come out and try to start it up, and it had broke overnight sitting in the garage.
Yes.
Moved on from that, and then got into another Sportster, and it was actually a really good one, and I tricked it out, and I want to say it was the late 80s. The craze, things were really starting to pick up in the Harley scene, and I ended up, you know, putting a DeLordo carb on it, and I found an old Ness fiberglass tail section kind of cafe'd out, and, you know, just did these disc brake conversions for the old drum brake bikes back then, and I ended up selling it to a guy from Australia who gave me top dollar for it. And he says, you know, I'm going to ride this down to L.A., put it on a cargo container and ship it back home, and I'll double my money after all the expenses. And I'm like, man, you know, so that kind of started things off and rolling there. And then I hadn't done a full complete tear down all the way and nut and bolt back up at that point. And then I got my shovel head. And the shovel head was my first ground up custom.
You know, that's interesting. So have you done any metric customs, cafes and things like that?
I've been showing, it was Larry Pegram's old bike. He ran a 2009 Pro AMA flat track.
Okay.
And it was a Ducati GT1000. So it was actually a feature in Motorcyclist magazine when he was campaigning it in 2009, and a client of mine picked it up off of eBay. Some corn farmer in Iowa bought it, and he thrilled himself. He figured out real quick it was too much bike for him.
Right.
Put it back up on eBay, and my client found it. So I like to tell people we basically took a race bike and put lipstick and a license plate on it. But, you know, yeah, as far as, I mean, this thing had fiberglass bodywork. It was all business, nothing pretty, you know. And so we did handmade aluminum bodywork for it, tail and gas tank, and did a titanium exhaust system, 2-into-1, you know, with segmented pie cuts. And the frame had been cut up for the track. Basically, they cut a lot of the bracing out of it to loosen it up for flexibility in the track.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, he ran two bikes that year. One had a full race frame, and the other was a factory frame, and we had the factory framed bike. So I thought, well, if we re-weld all the stuff they cut it out, then it's just another stock framed bike. So what we did, instead of welding in the tubing that they'd cut out, we basically made pinch collars, if you would. It's a piece of tubing that's like got a slice through it, and it's got bolts that pinch it. And so we put the tubing up in place and slide the pinch collar over it so that you can actually remove it and make it track ready within an hour or two.
Oh, okay.
So now it has the rigid feel that the frame needs for street riding, but it's, you know, has the ability still to be track ready within a matter of an hour. And, you know, it's gotten a lot of attention. We actually... I'm negotiating with Jordan over at Hot Bike to put it in front of his buddies at Cycle World, just because I had it out in Verona, Italy, in January for the Motorbike Expo, and then just recently last Saturday I was down at the Quail Gathering with it. We put it in the off-road competition class. And got a lot of eyeballs on it. I actually registered the bike too late to be judged for any trophies or awards, but all the same, it's like, I want to put it in front of the right people that can appreciate it, you know?
Oh, that's great, because I know we were talking before the show to get you on here, and you were saying you were going to get in, but you weren't going to be able to be judged. So, And I understand that we'll talk about it later, but someone brought over quite the hefty electric motorcycle and showed that thing off that won honors. That's another builder. But how was the quail, by the way?
It was beautiful. I mean, you know, I guess the best comparison you can use is it's like the Concours d'Elegance at Pebble Beach for cars.
Yep.
This is the same version, more or less, for motorcycles. I mean, the same kind of ambiance, setting, et cetera, et cetera. The prestige, you know, I mean, it's well attended. There's a lot of celebrity, you know, people showing up. I looked at it like, you know, this bike's going to be in front of the type of people like, say, a Jay Leno collector.
Right.
You know, that's the caliber of bikes that show up there. And there's some of the most interesting and unusual. I mean, I actually was kind of researching because I'm doing some work for a guy with a 1927 BMW. And there happened to be three of them there from 25 to 29 that were exact representations of this bike I'm helping him restore. And
wow.
So, you know, it's like a whole, I mean, my bread and butter is the Harleys, you know.
Right.
They're full custom. But the restoration stuff it's challenging, you know, and I find it refreshing just because it's more exacting, you know. I mean, with custom, it's as you feel, free-form art, you know.
Right.
And this stuff, no, the pinstripe has to be this and that. And this is, like, here's reference photos, say, of the Guggenheim book or, you know, some old pre-World War II black and white imagery stuff, you know. So you really have to do your homework with them.
Well, that is amazing. We're coming up to a break, so I don't want to dig into it. So, folks, to hear more about, learn more about Kirk and maybe even have him build you a really high-end motorcycle, go on over to www.customdesignstudios.com and you'll learn more about Kirk. And what you'll find out is he is not limited to any one style. He has many, 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 many styles that he works with. And that's what I like about Kirk, is he's always going beyond the next thing. So hang on. We'll be right back with more of the show and more of our interview with Kirk.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau de Smell Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punker Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late-night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau de Smell, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau de Smell, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau de Smell. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
And you could crack a chrome crown nut, make a hardtail go soft,
Welcome back to the third segment of the show, where we continue our candid conversations. And if you wish to participate in the show, make sure to visit our Facebook page where you can make comments and contact us. And in the future, we'll go ahead and post who's going to be on the show. So if you're listening, please, we'll start posting and who's going to be on the show. And if you got questions of the guest, put them on there, and we will ask our guests that. So anyway, right now we've got our good friend Kirk Taylor, custom bike builder, TV personality, owner of Custom Design Studios, which is in, I want to say, northern middle of California. Where are you actually located?
Well, we're in Marin County, which is the North Bay side of San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes.
We're right at the beginning of the wine country.
That's okay. Right. And then if he heads, all he has to do is head west to go to the Quail, right?
South, actually.
South, that's right, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spent a year
south
there in
to the
Navy.
Quail.
What's that, Walt?
I spent a year there in the Navy.
Oh, okay.
So I was in Novato. What city are you in?
Well, that's where I'm at, too. You were probably at Hamilton Air Base.
Yep, I was.
Yeah. Yep. All right. It's not an air base anymore, but it's still there. Actually, they use it partially as a Coast Guard station still.
Yeah, when I was there, it was not an air base. They called it an air base, but it was not an air base. But they had the full housing open, mm-hmm. and they let guys from all different places, if you couldn't find on-base housing at any of the different facilities, you'd go up to Hamilton and get on-base housing.
Oh, okay.
And so I was actually at Vallejo, which is now closed.
Right.
But I just go
Mare
down.
Island, right.
I forget what the road is, but there's a road that goes straight from Novato to Vallejo. And so
Highway 37.
37, that's right. And I knew it was 30-something.
And it probably makes for a nice riding, too.
Well, but I didn't have a bike
when
then.
When it's not too windy, it's all right, yeah.
Yeah, I had my Mustang back then, and so I'd just go roaring down there, and, you know, I'd have my, I'd get there in the morning and come back, and if I had the duty, I'd spend the night or whatever, you know, but it was fun, and once again, you're right in the midst of the best wine in the world, so.
Yes, you are, and that's really exploded, too, over the last decade or so. Amazing how wine has just expanded. So let's shift gears and talk about some of the cool stuff you're working on right now. I know that off air we were talking about a new project that you're working on. Why don't you share with us a little bit what your new project is? You've been you've got some partners that you're working with.
Well, what we currently have is I call it an arched backbone. It's a piece of 4-inch round tubing, aluminum tubing. And we're going to be putting hubless wheel technology on it. It's a different type of hubless wheel. You've seen some in the past.
Yep.
This is a fixed ring. We call it ring drive. It's a little bit different. But long story short, we're doing a couple different. But one's going to be with an electric motor setup, and the one I'm currently working on has an antique Ducati 250 cc motor in it. It's a bevel drive, hubless wheels, arched backbone. It's kind of a conglomeration of a classic-looking antique-style motor with 21st-century technology like Tron. Right? So, our intent is to take it out to Bonneville, set a record with it. As far as I know at this point, there is no actual class for it, so they're going to probably create one. We'll get a track record, and it's more an exercise in proof of technology. As I said, we're going to be doing an electric version as well, because that's how it all started with the ring drive technology was a derivative of the electric stuff that we were looking at and pursuing and trying to develop. And it's one of the things that's really interesting with this hubless setup is they did some testing recently with thermal imaging and found out that there was it was roughly a 40% reduction in the heat signature.
Is that because there's less friction-wise?
I'm not an engineer, so it's really hard for me to explain the technical side of it. But the layman's understanding is basically because the friction at the center point with an axle through it, it's greater. It develops more heat. But the way this drive setup is you have three rollers, like basically a triangulation, if you will, for the pickup points on the drive for the wheel. So it disperses it more or less over a broader area, and because it's more dispersed and less concentrated, it also dissipates quicker. So you're making less signature because you put it in 3 points as opposed to one centralized point. But what really, I guess, is fueling this whole thing is the Department of Defense took a look at it, and they're very interested. They want to see some prototypes with some of the military vehicles. And I thought, wow, this, you know, we might be on the beginning of something really. I'm just happy to be part of, you know.
Right.
see if we can, you know, I mean, my role in it is limited primarily to just, you know, keeping the motor side of things running and doing the custom touches. I'm, you know, I got a great fabricator that used to work for Cosman Racing, and he does most of the frame structural stuff, and, you know, and then I make it look sexy.
Well, now, so. Now, when that's one thing I was going to ask you is when you're putting together a build, do you do your own tube bending and shop? Do you work with other people, and do you take your concepts? Let's say a client comes in and says, Kirk, I want this to look like this, and they've kind of put it on a piece of paper. And then do you use CAD? Do you use hand do it, big mock-ups? How does that work when you're building something?
Well, the short answer is yes to all those various avenues of pursuing. We do some tube bending in house, but like for say like that 4-inch round arched piece of aluminum,
right?
That's a specialty manufacturer that's got a roller that size, because you're still dealing with mandrels and what have you, you know. So okay, well, I need it to have an arc of, you know, in that case, it's going to be something like about a 12-foot. 360-degree 12-foot, and it segments out of that, or, you know. So that's way beyond our capacity, you know, in-house. So it goes to an industrial manufacturing facility for the specs and producing it.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a lot of this stuff. I've found over the years, it's like, yeah, I could collect tools till the end of my days and never have enough tools to mm-hmm. do everything. So a lot of times it's more efficient, cost-effective to job stuff out. You know,
yes.
It's, like, it's better to have a Rolodex. I know that's dating myself right there. A Rolodex? But all the same, it's better to have a big Rolodex full of contacts and, you know, those kinds of sources. And that's where in a lot of, in, you know, I mean, being in this game as long as I have been, that's where a lot of my value is that I bring to the table, is I have this vast network of resources. And it's like, you know, originally these guys wanted me to make the frame for the electric bicycle. And I said, no, I got a frame table and I do modifications on frames. I do not do production. You know, I don't want to get into frame manufacturing, but I know just the guy.
Right.
You know, and he's making the Pro Stock chassis for the S&S Pro Stock motors. And it's like, this is just the project that's right in his wheelhouse. And, you know, and more or less, fast forward like 8 years, and, you know, here we are on the verge of something really cool. And, you know, we're in near the Silicon Valley. So there's a whole lot of that forward thinking, what's the next thing?
Right.
You know, and people are like looking for the next thing. I guess kind of new age investors, if you will, you know. So, you know, it's fertile grounds here, you know, for
now,
creating.
Just to back up for the hubless, mm-hmm. I've seen Mike Brown's, I've seen, the other big guy that.
Billy Lane.
So I've seen these, and these were pretty monstrosities, pretty large bikes stretched out with these great big hubless type things in it. And they demonstrated they work. How is yours going to be different? Is it going to be more sleek? Is it and handability? How's that all working together there?
Well, what they were doing, I guess the easy way to describe it was more or less like the wheel arrangement on a train. The wheel is on a track, if you will. And it's captured by a couple rollers, and that's what drives the track. You know?
Right.
So the wheel being the track, basically. And it's all centralized, again, into one specific location. What we're doing is we're putting, like, a toothed gear on the rim, and it's gear driven, and then we have these nylon guides at three different points, and that's how it's picking up off of that. Like we're looking at two different setups with this antique motor, because the easy button is to, like, okay, it's got a sprocket off the transmission. We're going to run a 428 series motocross type chain to that gear, or we can do a step out to a jack shaft, which is probably what we're going to do. Is we're going to do the, you know, chain to the jack shaft, and then it's going to be a series of stepped gears to the ring gear on the rim.
Okay.
So yeah, it's that's the main differences.
Well, and that would make sense, because with the gearing and with the spreading the points out around like a is like a triangle, then basically where the points are that are going to
correct. Yeah.
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 So
it's,
now you've
it's
got
the, it's the age old triangulation theory for support.
Yes.
You know.
Well, you know, triangles, whether it's bikes, bicycles, or bridges, is yet to be beaten. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about the rigidity that a triangle brings to anything. It's amazing.
I saw something the other night. It was a documentary on Tesla.
Yes.
And throughout his career, he was constantly referencing or going back to groupings of three. He
yes.
was obsessed with three. And I just find it completely amazing and mesmerizing when I start thinking about, I mean, that man was on next level all the way.
Oh, he was.
But it's like there was that concept, and he got it, you know, and I hope to have like just a little window into whatever all that is. You know, but I understand where they're going with it, you know, but if, God, I'll never, you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm just happy to be part of, and I get the idea, the minutia of it's lost on me, you know, because I'm more of the style guy, you know, like I said, I grew up in a machine shop, and I understand
yep.
basic engineering and stuff like that. I'm not accredited or schooled in that per se. I do have lots of associates that are, and, you know, and I defer to them when it comes to matters of technicalities.
Well, you know, and I think that means then you, you're a team player, and you've learned that by having a team of people, especially for these special projects that you've been involved with. I know you've got a car program that you're working on too. And again, that's another team effort, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's why a lot of these, a lot of the people involved with this project are from, you know, like I said, zero. You know, they came on board, they worked out a contract for the motor supplies, so they got a licensing agreement worked out there. A couple guys came over from Google and Microsoft, and like they were just out at an engineering show in Detroit and got a lot of interest from Fiat, Chrysler, and Honda. And Motor Trend magazine, you know, did a little bit of coverage on it, and they said as soon as they're done with one of the prototypes, they want to come on out and do a follow-up test ride, test drive, and evaluation of the technology. So there's getting a lot of interesting stuff happening. Even some people from NASA came over and talked to them.
That's amazing.
Like, I know. It's like it blew my mind. It's like, who knew, right? You know? But they were, you know, it's safe to say probably one of the big hits of this engineering show. So,
well, that is awesome, and I'm so glad you're part of something that they can work with you, and you're working with this, and your partner who's got all these connections, who's getting out there and showcasing this and stuff. That is wonderful. And Kirk, we're going to be we got about a minute and a half left with you, so. Just as a aside, is there anything else you'd like to share in about a minute?
Well, let's see. What's, you know, still trying to see some more serious, intelligent, intellectual motorcycle programming being
yes.
offered.
Yes.
You know, I've got a producer guy that's trying to pitch this idea still. He's well accredited, lots of big projects that he's been part of, and he believes in the idea of doing, I like to call it Anthony Bourdain on two wheels.
Yep.
Because, you know, I look at the current, you know, programming that's out there on Velocity, for instance, and it's all the same. It's the same kind of car, same Sam Elliott sounding narrative in the background, and the same, you know, either slide guitar or rock and roll crunch going on.
Yes.
And false drama. And it's like, I thought we were done with that. You know, they finally killed American Chopper, you know, rightfully so, and now they're trying to bring the dead horse back to life. And I'm like, no. You know, the motorcycle world is so much more than, well, you know, than that ridiculous.
It is, and I'm gonna say thanks so much for being on with us. And folks, if you want more about Kirk, just go to customdesignstudios.com. Thanks for being on with us, Kirk.
Steve, thanks for having me again, and hope to talk with you guys again soon with bigger and better news.
Excellent. We'll talk to you soon.
I saw the road ahead. It was a long and winding trail. I saw a chance to lead.
Hey, everyone. Steve Johann here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johann. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices. But hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of the show. In this segment, we like to start things off with our Between the Lines, where we share a weekly safety tip. So, what safety tip do we have?
Well,
this week?
I have some information, and as you've noticed, John is not with us, and that's because John is at his weekly. It turns out that John has 2 weeks in a row of his extra training, because he is a safety training expert. He trains people on motorcycles to get their license here, and then better to become a better rider. And he says, Steve, it's now spring. We've got 2 meetings. So he's like this week and next week. Yep. And
see, he's also an instructor.
Yes, he is.
So that's, that's even more crap to have to do.
And that's on top of his normal job.
Yeah.
And the reason why he does remote now, and he comes in nice and clear because we Skype and all that, is because he lives a good 45 minutes north of where we live. And that's on a good day. If he's, he's like, 50 miles? 45 miles north. And on a good day, he'll get here in about 45 minutes to an hour. So we're like, John, I knew it was going to come to a point where you were going to do it. So we got him set up with his own little studio, and that's working great. And then I got a little technical stuff here so that we can do crossover with our interview. But anyway, all of that to say, I have some very interesting rider safety bulletin put out by Wisconsin. It says, fewer motorcycles are dying in Wisconsin and the U.S. as a whole, but increasingly those involved in fatal crashes are older. Now, we've been talking about that.
Yep.
Going back to 1992, the average age of someone in a fatal motorcycle crash was 30 years of age. Now, in 2017, it's 44 years, stated David Pabst, not to be confused with Pabst Blue Ribbon, safety director of Wisconsin Department of Transportation. It comes down to a couple of factors. The state's population is aging, and baby boomers are buying motorcycles, which that's what you did, Walt. You were a late bloomer when it came. Yep. As I said in the last, I started riding at 20, and I rode till I was, I'd say, about 31, and then I gave up riding. And in all honesty, it was because two things. I had just got married. We were in an apartment. We were saving to get in a house, and all my money was going towards that. And two, I had pretty much sold my old bike, and it needed to be sold. And I had gotten on my buddy's 900, and my wife and I went for a ride, and I had such a good time that I decided I would kill myself if I had a bike like this. And so I decided I needed to step away from riding, because for me, the need for speed was very high on my list. Yep. And I realized I'm starting a life with my family, and I don't want to kill myself. So I stepped away, and then life got in the way, and three kids, house, blah, blah, blah. Now, at 58, I'm like, I would really, really, really like to have, as I told Kirk offline, even a $2,500 or $2,000 whatever bike. So I'm working towards that, and I've got to scrounge to do that, because it has to come from money that isn't from what you call found money.
Yep.
And so that's my goal. So I need to get that going. I've got a place to park it, shed in the backyard. So it's got to be a smaller bike. It can't be a big bike.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that said, a new national report put out by the Governor's Highway Safety Association shows riders over age 40 now comprise the greatest share of motorcycle fatalities, many of which do not get advanced or additional training. And they are not picking out the bike appropriate for their skills. Now, that's something that John has talked about every right. week, is get training, and buy an appropriate bike for your ability.
Lot of it is that they're doing what you're talking about. They rode when they were younger.
Yes.
Now they're older. They're getting a bike, and they're going, oh, I know how to ride. You know, and you probably rode really good when you were younger.
Yes.
But the first thing you want to do if you buy a bike, if you actually have a bike that you're going to start riding regularly, you want to get the extension.
I'm going back up to the course and taking it all over again.
Well, you know, you probably don't need the beginning rider course.
No.
But you can get the you know, the
I took the intermediate expert. I want to do the expert, yes.
Yeah, and learn, you know, all of this stuff. And then they, as it happens, our buddy Chris has a road course where you go out and get on the highway,
yes,
and learn to ride on the highway without getting killed. And I always tell everybody, the only reason I didn't get killed was because, I mean, the only reason I'm alive is because I didn't get killed. Because
yes.
I just happened that something would happen and I'd do whatever seemed best. And somehow I managed to do just
unlike
the right
me,
thing.
Who didn't know how to use the front brake.
Or if it
brake.
Was the wrong thing, then I didn't do it bad enough to kill myself or anything. But you just keep learning. And then after a while, you get to the point where it's like, and once again, I've had a situation where I remember getting there and I remember being on the other side, but I have no idea how I got through that freaking mess.
Well, and here's another thing to think about, and I hadn't thought about this, but not only your skill level, but they said as an older person, let's say 45, let's say 55, 58 like me, I work out at the gym all the time, and I'm in good shape for my size, or for my age and my size, but I don't have the strength that I had when I was 20 or 30.
Yep.
My faculties aren't as quick, and so getting a bigger bike. And when you stop, we've talked about this. You get on that big bike, and if you stop all of a sudden, and people try to stop with their feet, you're not supposed to. You use your brakes.
Right.
That's a lot of weight to hold up. And if you've had some knee surgeries,
yep,
you've had some hip replacements, now it's not like you're out there as a young buck or a young buckess. What's a female deer?
Doe.
A young doe. But you don't have that strength that you used to, and you're going to have to build up to that. So Get a bike that's more appropriate. So anyway, they're saying the good news is, according to the preliminary numbers, overall motorcycle deaths have decreased 5.6% from 2016 to 2017. But in Wisconsin, fatalities were down 9.4% over the same period of time. But don't get your hopes up, because it said the death went down 9% in 2017, 2.5% in 2016, up 19% in 2015, and down in 19% 2014. They say even weather has a lot to do with it. So if it's a long extended winter, guess what? Yep. Less riding days, less chance of killing yourself. So there's all these factors. Folks, we want you just to ride safe. So in other words, when you go to buy a new bike, don't let your buddy force you into buying something that you shouldn't. And don't let your eyeballs buy something you shouldn't. Go out and test ride a ton and a ton and a ton. And don't let the salesman push you in it. Ride every make, manufacture, every style, and then come back to the one you go, you know, I really like this, but maybe I'll go for the next level down on that. I will go for a smaller size or a shorter, if you're tall, whatever. But give yourself a chance to ride a lot of different machines, and don't feel pressure. Make it actually have a lot of fun and say, this is probably the only time I'm going to test drive 20 bikes, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to make those salesmen work for their living, and they're going to give me a better deal, because when I come back in, you're going, you know, I'm really kind of go between this, this, and this. I got three bikes now. What are you going to do to make a difference for me? And you could say that, and they can't go, oh, I know you really. No, I have three bikes, and they're three different manufacturers.
Yep.
Wow. There goes our music.
There's our music. We'll be back in just a moment with our final segment.
What comes to your mind when you think about motorcycle riders? The first picture that comes to my mind is a road warrior. A road warrior is someone who has a passion for life and adventure, who willingly pits themselves against Mother Nature and the dangers of the road, all for a chance to see the world from the seat of a two-wheeled iron steed. A road warrior must approach biking in the same manner as a good soldier, because just like your military counterparts, you will always face plenty of real and potentially dangerous situations every time you're on the road. These include bad weather, animals, road conditions, pedestrians, and other vehicles that share the road with you. I suggest we apply the soldier's way of life to our riding experience by following these few simple rules. 1. Get basic training. 2. Get to know your equipment. 3. Keep your equipment in good running order. 4. Be prepared. Like the good soldier who carries his 50-pound pack, it's a good idea to carry proper riding gear, tools, and other essentials, including a cell phone, credit card, and at least $5 cash. 5. Just as a good soldier follows instructions given to him by his superiors, we need to follow our instructions too. Know the law and follow it. By doing this, you are less likely to encounter traffic tickets, higher insurance rates, and possible impoundment of your bike. 6. And lastly, keep a cool head. A trained soldier always keeps his cool, no matter what is coming at him. You can't think clearly when you're angry. And speaking of clear thinking, a good soldier would never face the enemy under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and neither should you. Ride sober. So to all of you, fellow road warriors, God bless, ride safe, and we'll see you out on the road.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Well, guys and gals, welcome back to the final segment of the show. This is where we usually start things out with rallies and runs and briefly cover tours, rides, and events and more. And I wanted to ask Walt what's happening, but we didn't get a chance to go through things seen out on the road. And Walt usually has something nice, but I just wanted to jump in real quick. Last week's trivia question is, because we don't have one this week, was what motorcycle was ridden by the Steve McQueen character in the movie, in the prison camp? What was it?
I think it was a Triumph.
Yes, it was. 650 Triumph.
Yeah, now they make it out to be a BMW, but it wasn't. It was a Triumph.
Yep. So. Walt, what did you see out on the road this week?
As it happens, I was out very early this morning, and I had a medical appointment down in Totem Lake, and so I was roaring down there and having a good old time. And I just found it very interesting to see people who, as you go by them on a big motorcycle, they just kind of, oh, what is that? You know, and it's like, you know, they're used to seeing, I think, the sport bikes and the people out, you know, acting a fool. And when you go by on a big old cruiser, or mine's actually a touring bike.
Right.
You know.
With a little louder pipes than normal.
A little louder pipes, and you kind of kick back, relaxed, having a good old time and a nice morning ride. And they're looking like, wow, you know, that guy's not an idiot. He's not, you know, he's not anything. And then they notice that I've got my patches. And then as they go by, they look, you know, and it says Crossroads Motorcycle Ministry. Ministry? Wait a minute, you know. And so I get a kick out of, you know, riding my motorcycle around and having people see things about my motorcycle and me and think, wow, that doesn't fit my perception. And so hopefully I'm changing perceptions a little
bit. Well, and there are plenty of good people out there out on the road. To be honest, I think the other thing too, Walt, is if you're going by on a lot of the what I'd call metrics, not the sport bikes per se, but the metric normal,
Yeah. They
don't even hear them. They just go right by. Yeah. It's like, well, what was that? Well, it could have been a Honda, Triumph, a BMW, whatever, and it just scooted by, and they didn't hear it. Yours tends to be a little louder, and it's funny because there is some guy, fortunately I'm sleeping through it, but if I have in the summer, I have my window open in the morning, there's somebody that's going down the road, and it's a Harley, and they're heading off early in the morning off to work every single day. We're talking like 4:30 in the morning. I hear this rapping out, and he's going down 164th. That's a mile away, but it carries, and yep. It's like, so there's certain times of the day that I know certain riders are going to work or they're coming back. And also across the way we have like a speed trap. And sure enough, I'll be in the house, and if there's the windows open, I hear a brrr. It's the cop on their Harleys circling a couple times and getting their spot and parking. And I'm like, oh, you buggers. So
they're not as loud as me. Same model, but not as loud as me. Because
right. Well, they want to be a little more quiet.
A little more quiet, but they're more powerful than mine. Let me tell you. Well, there's our music. And remember, keep the chrome side up and the rubber side down. And we'll see you out on the road.